everybody. On 88.1, it's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. In 25 years, there may be more than 9.5 billion people inhabiting this planet, and keeping everyone fed with safe, nutritious food will be a huge challenge. That challenge will include many thorny ethical issues as we attempt to produce enough good food to satisfy that incredible need. This morning, we're going to revisit a conversation with an acclaimed researcher who approaches the problem of food insecurity from a global perspective. Dr. Ruth Faden is the director of the Johns Hopkins Berman Institute of Bioethics and the co-principal investigator of the Global Food Ethics Project. This is an international team of researchers, ethicists, nutritionists, and people who study a wide variety of areas related to food policy and, in particular, the ethical challenges of feeding an ever-growing human population. Last spring, Dr. Faden's team issued a report called the 7x5 Agenda for Ethics and Global Food Security, which suggests 7 projects that can be undertaken in the next 5 years to address the complex issues around global food security. When we talked here on Maryland Morning in early June, she joined me on the phone from Massachusetts, and we began by talking about why food security must be viewed as an ethical issue.
It's pretty straightforward, actually, Tom. When you start thinking at all about how we can feed, as you say, as much as 9.5 billion people, the answers, as you start to think about them, all raise kind of trade-offs between values. So to give you a quick example, it's a pretty straightforward thing to raise enough food to feed everybody if we don't care about the impact of how we produce that food on the environment. But we do care, right? So one ethical challenge is how to strike the balance between protecting the environment in a context of climate change and producing enough food. It would also be an easy trick, maybe not an easy trick, but more straightforward, to produce enough food if we were indifferent to the impact of how we raise that food on, for example, the farm workers and farmers whose labor produces the food. So if we were indifferent to farm standards and worker protection, we could pretty quickly get enough food. Similarly, if we were indifferent to animal welfare, if we didn't care at all about how it is that livestock are treated, we'd probably be okay as well. So this is just to illustrate that once you start thinking at all hard about how it is, in fact, that we will get to this goal, this moral imperative of global food security, we realize that we've got to make some very ethically challenging trade-offs.
And it's a fascinating endeavor to think about what those challenges are, and I found that the 7 projects that you're suggesting are really quite fascinating. The one that sticks out to me in a big way is the ethics of meat consumption,
yes,
particularly in high-income and middle-income countries. So how much meat we consume as a species, how does that impact these ethical decisions that we've got to make?
So there's been a controversy for a long time, and almost, I would imagine, many of our listeners right now are either vegetarians or vegans, or have friends who are vegetarians and vegans and have been involved in many dining room table conversations about, is it ethically okay to eat meat? That is to say, is it all right to kill another animal in order that we as a species enjoy a better meal or a more nutritious one? That debate is probably not one that is resolvable. That is to say, people have very deep views about the ethics of whether it's appropriate to eat non-human animals. And we might leave it as an unresolved debate, except for one thing. Eating meat is not only ethically controversial from the standpoint of the rights and interests of the animals we are eating, but it also has a profound impact on the environment. It turns out that the pace at which we currently eat meat and dairy, I have to throw dairy in here as well, produces more greenhouse gases than all of the transportation sector combined. That is, you could take all the emissions from vehicles on the road, airplanes, boats, combine them all up together, and the impact in terms of greenhouse gases doesn't come close to the impact that the livestock production results in. Most of us don't appreciate that. We've all been, I think, well-educated or informed about the impact of the transportation sector. We've had all this focus on fuel-efficient cars and carbon sequestering in that sector, but not when it comes to the eating of meat and dairy.
And Americans account for an awful lot of the consumption of meat and dairy, about 4.5% of the world's population, but we're eating 15% of the meat. So this is a particularly germane issue for our country and our public policy.
Yes, absolutely. That's correct. We are huge consumers of meat and dairy, and you know, meat and dairy tastes good.
And your project then would concern what then? You wish to shape the conversation about this. What do you hope to achieve in this particular aspect of your suggestions?
What we want to do in this project is put to the side, for purposes of expanding public conversation, this controversy about the ethics of eating meat, and instead focus on two other important values where there's more consensus. One is human health. So how much of what kinds of meat and dairy products should we be eating in order to have optimum nutrition? And that's a hugely debatable and controversial area right there. And then also, how should we think about what we can do to reduce meat consumption once we figure out how much meat and dairy people at different points in the life cycle should have for good nutrition? And some people will argue that zero, and other people will argue, no, there is a place for meat and dairy in the diet. Once we figure that out, then we can take that and we can look at it in terms of the kinds of impacts on climate change and the environment that we've just been discussing and determine what our target should be. So once we know what the target consumption rate should be for meat and dairy, taking both health and environmental impact into consideration, then we have to think about the ethics of what we can do to moderate or influence people's consumption of meat and dairy, so we get closer to that target range.
Dr. Ruth Faden from the Johns Hopkins Berman Institute of Bioethics. She led a team of researchers who published a list of 7 proposals to address ethical issues related to global food security. On Maryland Morning, I'm Tom Hall. Dr. Faden and I spoke in June. One of the 7 projects involves labeling. What do labels like organic or fair trade or certified humane really mean? Dr. Faden thinks that labels like these need to be codified in a more accurate way.
So some of these labels are terrific. They stand for or reflect very carefully researched operations that are quite serious and reliable and clear about what they're vouchsafing. Others, not so much. And most products that you might be interested in buying, or most foods that you'd be interested in buying, will have some, but not all. So some would have the USDA organic on it. Some might say fair trade certified. Some might say environmentally friendly, but you can't get it all at once. What we're proposing is essentially to create a mega system, if you like, of certifications and labels that would be kind of one-stop shopping for the consumer, so that I could go to my supermarket, whether it's a big box store or it's a boutique, and I would be able to look at a product, pick it up, hold it, and be able to see with one glance where the product stood on a range of ethical values, food safety, sustainable farming practices, that would be the environment, labor standards, animal welfare would be the principal ones. And what we are proposing here is not to replace the certification and labeling that is currently working well, but to aggregate them in a way to make it easier for the consumer, and also where the labels are not so accurate or not so clear, to replace them. And if we really are successful, what we're envisioning is a way in which you could scan the product and be able to see the breakdown. So if I'm really interested in labor standards and want to make sure that it's all fair trade and that there's no child labor involved in this product, I can see that. If I'm interested in animal welfare practices, I can see that. If I'm interested in food safety, I'll be able to see that disaggregated with a sort of scan with my smartphone.
One of the projects has to do with climate smart agriculture that is also climate just. And in the report, you make the point that in tropical regions, for example, the places that are most often hit by droughts and extreme weather events, they have a huge need for climate smart agriculture, but to be climate smart and climate just is often difficult for people in less affluent circumstances. What is the distinction between climate smart and climate just?
It's a very critical distinction from our point of view. So it's extremely exciting that over the past year or so, this language of climate smart agriculture has taken on a life of its own. It represents, in fact, an international agreement that came out in 2014, sponsored by the United Nations, that is a commitment on the part of a significant number of nations across the world and many more organizations to work together to try to develop more aggressively, more rapidly, new technologies in farming and agricultural practices that are both kinder to the environment, that will have less of a negative impact on the environment, and that are also adaptive, more adaptive to the changes of in our climate that are sadly inevitable. So this is all great. This is all really, really good. It's important, very, very important, that we find better ways to both adapt agricultural practices to our changing climate and also do what we can to mitigate the impact of the agricultural sector on climate change. The problem about the difference between climate smart and climate just is recognizing that the impact of climate change on the world is not distributed evenly, that there are parts of the world where the burden of climate change now and in the future will fall most heavily on the world's most disadvantaged farmers, on the world's poorest people who rely on those farmers heavily for their basic survival. So if you think about where people are poorest in the world, that's where climate change is going to be the most destructive. The areas that hug around the equator, especially, for example, huge swaths of Africa. What we need to do to make climate smart, climate just, is ensure that the benefits of these new technologies will be experienced by the world's most disadvantaged farmers, and also that they will be able to afford them and that they will be the right kinds of technologies that will help them in their particular circumstances. So it's not as if climate change is going to affect all food producers equally. It will hit hardest the people who always suffer the most, which is the world's most disadvantaged.
Dr. Ruth Faden is the director of the Johns Hopkins Berman Institute of Bioethics and a professor of biomedical ethics at Hopkins. She is the co-principal investigator of the Global Food Ethics Project, which released an agenda for global food security last May. She and I spoke last spring. We've got a link to the report and more on the 7 projects the report recommends, as well as a link to blog posts with more information if you'd like to explore this subject further. Come on over to wipr.org/Maryland Morning. It's Maryland Morning with Sheila Cast. I'm Tom Hall. Lots more coming up. Stay with us.